This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we're on live here at both the Pet Life Radio and on Instagram Live. You're here with Dr. Jeff Werber, your host for the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. And alongside that is our simulcast with IG Live. I'm saying hi to everybody. I'm waving exactly on a good rainy day. So anyway, get your questions ready. We are ready to talk about anything you want. Well, first of all, as JB just pointed out, yes, rainy day. You know, it's interesting. I'm curious what you think, but you know, for me, I'm cooped up. I shouldn't say that is a negative, but I am in my hospital, my clinic all day, 5 days a week. So if it's raining outside, I don't care. I mean, you drive to work. It takes me 10 minutes. I'm in the practice all day long. So let it rain, let it pour. I don't care. But weekends where I get to relax that and maybe get a little sunshine and be outside and walk my dogs without having to, you know, get them back sopping wet and having to dry them off and whatever. And yet, I think for the last 5 weeks here, four of them were raining and weekends. And it was beautiful during the week. And then it starts raining again. It's like crazy already. It's a joke, right? A little bit is okay. You know, usually here in LA, if we got like two weekends a year, Sundays and Saturdays, where it was raining, that would be a lot. Now it's been beautiful week. And then come Saturday, I joke, if it's raining, it must be Saturday. So I'm curious to know what you think. I would imagine that anybody who has to drive for a living, right? And they're on the freeway, they're stuck in that traffic all the time in the rain. I'm sure they prefer it to rain on weekends. But if you work in a building, in an office, and even in home, let pour during the week. Who cares? Just give me a nice weekend. So anyway, let's say you got a question here. It says, I like to give my cats crunchies and wet food, much of each good amount for the day. Well, it really depends. Every animal is different. I have now four cats. We had to put our little Munchie to sleep several months ago. Old age, he had a great run. And he was, if you were to ask him, he would have said, oh my God, this was the best ever, because he was a stray. He was in a shelter. I mean, he was probably going to be put to sleep at some point. He comes into a house. And we called him Munchie because he couldn't stop eating, probably because he didn't eat well or wasn't fed much at the shelter. He made up for it. Let's put it that way. He was not a skinny cat, but he was a great cat. So, but anyway, you know, every cat right now with the four cats I have, our biggest eater is our smallest cat. He packs it away. Boy, I wish I had his metabolism because he just eats and eats and he's always lean and he's not hyper. I mean, he tests out perfectly. He's not a thyroid problem. He is just he's got a great metabolism. And my Ponzu, who's a domestic short hair, but he's got a flame point. So he's Siamese in his bloodline somewhere, but he's my chubber. He took over for Munchie. So a question here, Rosie Lemontos, man, you're coming in for a spay this week and she has a small umbilical hernia too. Especially we should do for the recovery. Okay. We will fix the hernia or it should be fixed at the same time. I got a call this week. This is really something. It's a 15-year-old dog. I believe it's a Frenchie because they talked about the breathing problem. A 15-year-old dog that's coming in this week. So, but now I'm hoping the message read or recorded incorrectly. And it's 15-month-old, I hope, not year-old. I'll be checking it out. But they wanted a spay and the soft palate resection. Wait a second. This dog is 15. He's already made it 15 years. At 15 years, I don't think we have to worry about a breathing problem, because if it was bad enough to need to be fixed, he wouldn't be alive right now. And as far as the spay, yes, can they get Pyometra? There are many other things they can get, but I don't know. That would be a tough one. Logically, you would think that if a dog made it through 15 years without any of those female non-spay related problems, that he wouldn't be here with us to talk about it. But as I said, I'm going to re-listen to the recording and I'm warning, hey, Jeannie, because I would be surprised. I'm pretty sure it's a mistake. But anyway, I really like the surgical suits. They work well. You know, Nicole, what are your thoughts? Anyway, yes, I agree. Totally agree. They are really cool. That's kind of a new thing. In fact, I just, you know, as you know, I came back from the trade show, Global Pet Expo. I was in Orlando a couple of weeks ago. And I was amazed how many of these suits that they have. It sort of wraps the dog like into a burrito. They're comfortable. They're very soft. They stretch. They're great for them. And they stop them from having access to their incision. And because it's a suit that they wear, it doesn't affect their eating, doesn't affect their running around. They can still jump on the furniture, whatever they want to do, they can still do, but they can't get at their incision. So back to that original question about the coming in for a spay and umbilical hernia, it would really be the same because when we are fixing a hernia, by the way, that's when we want to fix umbilical hernia, is when they're being spayed, because the hernia is at the umbilicus, obviously umbilical hernia. And where we start our spay incision, at least I do, is about maybe a half an inch to an inch behind that umbilicus. So the way we're taught to do spays, and the landmark is going to be the umbilicus itself. And I don't like doing that. I learned from my first surgeon associate, Dr. Ed Leeds, who is probably one of the best surgeons in LA. He's finally retired, and he deserved to be retired because he put in a long career. But he was, I think, the first boarded surgeon in Los Angeles. Phenomenal surgeon. Anyway, he taught me when he worked with me, he taught me that don't use that. Feel the ribs, because every dog anatomically is a little different, and that umbilicus can be in different places, but that's not where the kidneys are. The kidneys don't care where the actual umbilicus is. What the kidneys do care is their relationship to the ribs. And we know, so he says, you take the right side, which is where the right kidney is always cranial to the left. So that's the one you want to have access to. You feel the very last rib, the 13th rib, and then you want to go a little bit in front of caudal tube, behind that spot, and that's where you should start your incision. And sometimes the umbilicus is about that same time, that same place, so it'll be about the same most of the time, but sometimes it's not. So if you only went by the umbilicus itself, that you might have to extend your incision, it's not as anatomically 100% correct. And I've been using that technique for 40 years. And Ed is right. It is the best way to go. Now, when you have an umbilical hernia, what I usually like to do, because if you have too big an incision, then it's really hard to keep all the stuff that you don't want to come out, like the fat and the omentum. So you want to keep that tucked in. So I first will go ahead and make my normal spay incision. I will do the spay itself. Then once everything is done, I'm taken care of, then I can extend the incision cranially, meaning forwardly, and fix the hernia. So yes, it should be done at the same time. But the only difference is going to be the incision is going to be a little bit longer because of that distance between the umbilicus and where you start your spay incision. So it's okay. It's really no different. In fact, I see a lot of spay incisions coming from shelters and things like that where they didn't extend it. They just made a much bigger spay incision. You know what I say? And this is, you know, it's kind of like you teach young doctors who are so nervous about the length of an incision, or when you want to take a mass off and you're not sure whether it's a mast cell or not. So what you do is you actually make it bigger, make the incision longer, just to make sure you've gotten all the surrounding potential tumor tissue as well. And I say, so the joke is you teach a young student, so what's going to heal faster, a 1-inch incision or a 4-inch incision? And they go, the 1-inch. I go, no, the same. Because you heal side to side. So the body doesn't care how long it is. It's healing side to side. It's going to heal in the exact same time. So don't worry about the length of the incision. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to have a longer incision. We fix it at the same time, but they're going to do just fine. Okay. 5-year-old cat coughs like a seal. No hairball comes up. What could it be? First of all, great question. I'm challenged with that all the time. And the answer still is hairballs. Now, of course, in a 5-year-old cat, we have to rule out other things. I had a cat come in the other day. It was a 3-year-old cat, kind of short hair, wasn't super long hair, but the same scenario. No nasal discharge, all right? No real coughing. The lungs sounded very clear. I offered, if they wanted, I could do a chest x-ray, but I thought it would be a waste of money because every other thing was perfect. But I say it's hairballs because he never coughs up a hairball. So I say this, and you just understand this. Let's say your sinks are backed up because of a clog somewhere in the piping under your house. Okay. It's going to cause that backup. Is that clog going to come up too? No. Once it gets past and it goes through that S loop under your sink, it's somewhere under your house. It gets stuck. That's why you need like a Roto-Rooter, but it still causes the backup. Well, same thing with a hairball. If they cough it up and the hairball itself is still in the stomach, it should come up. You'll see it. But once it gets out of the stomach, it's somewhere in the intestine, it's still going to cause the backup. It's still going to cause a slow movement or a blockage or whatever, but it itself will not come up. So before I start spending your money and taking x-rays, which are going to come back normal, or something you're not going to see anyway, I say, you know what? If everything else is perfect, no nasal discharge, no fever, lungs are clear, then could it be a, if they were coughing, then like a seal, that's more about coughing up a hairball. Could it be like a feline asthma? Of course it can be. And then you're going to have to maybe do that with x-rays. But what I would do first, as long as the cat is acting totally normally, eating well, everything is perfect, then I'd rather to test with a hairball remedy for, I usually say 4 days consecutively, then 2 to 3 times a week. Do that first. It's cheap. It's easy. The cat's still eating. Everything else is fine. If that doesn't work, then yes, we'll take some x-rays and maybe we'll diagnose something other. But now the reason why I was so also adamant that this was hairballs in this cat, it had flea dirt and he found fleas. So, you know, cats are so, they're crazy clean. So they're licking themselves. They're cleaning there. That's how they get tapeworms, because they're eating those fleas. So I said, no, this is definitely going to be hairballs. I think I'm right. All right. Next case. Let's see. Recommend a safe calming ingredient in those treats of chews. 10 pounds. Okay. So separation anxiety. I'm always a fan, of course, of doing something more natural if we can. Valerian root, passion flower, chamomile, all these things could be helpful. So I would try that. CBD even, melatonin, any of those things could work possibly. There's no downside. The thing that I recommend is going natural. Now, are there other safe calming ingredients? Yes. And if the separation anxiety is severe, then if it's only separation anxiety when you leave, you can do things like trazodone. You can do things like Xanax. If you have a condition that they are just nervous, anxious all the time, then I would talk to your veterinarian, things like, you know, get the SSRIs, the tricyclic antidepressants. Then you'd look at something like a Prozac. So those are the things that seem to work well. I use a lot of fluoxetine, Prozac, on those animals that are always having it. But if it happens only with a predictable event that is not all the time, then I would recommend doing the more natural stuff or doing the trazodones. They're more of like tranquilizers or mild sedatives. And those seem to work pretty well. Also, other things that you can do are like the Adaptil, the pheromones. That also seems to bring dogs down a little bit. So it makes them a little bit more calm, a little bit more manageable. And those are easy. And they're also very natural. And as I said, CBD seems to work well. Also, I have a product on my Performance by Dr. Jeff products called Chill. And Chill is a chew. And it's got all those good things in it. Valerian, passion flower, chamomile, poppy, melatonin. So that works as well. You can look it up and try that also. But it's a great alternative to the drugs. Should all dogs take probiotics? Well, here's my feeling about that. And this is, there are a lot of differences of opinion. If a dog has issues, GI, gastrointestinal issues, and seems to respond well to probiotics, then 100% I would do it. Now, could be again, many believe that it use them to take care of that problem, then just use it as needed. Others, like myself, say, look, if we have a dog who's got a sensitive GI tract and we want to do something, does it hurt to just keep them on a probiotic? And the answer is no. So I'm sort of torn. If it happens once in a blue moon, then use it on an as-needed basis. Use them as an as-needed basis. But if it was something that's happening all the time, then you might want to do it. I mean, there are a number of great products out there. Mutt-Gut is really a good one. And it's a super product. And that's something, it's a powder. You can add it to the food all the time. So that might be something that you might want to consider. Rimadyl every morning for arthritis. She's about 11 or 12 more because there's a lot of negatives. So that is the great question that we're going to come back to, because I was also going to talk about Librela, and we're going to talk about social media and the inaccuracies often of these social media posts by those who just don't know. And they go viral and people are worried. And Rimadyl, that's the example I use to talk about the reality, the truth. So anyway, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Rimadyl. We're going to talk about the isoxazoline flea and tick products. And we're going to talk about the new Librela, all combined into one category because they are all interrelated. Don't go away.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back live here with Dr. Jeff. And I want to get back to that great question about Rimadyl. David, thank you for the great question. So here's the issue. When Rimadyl first came out, it had two dose ranges that were given. One was a post-operative five-day max dose just for post-operative pain. And it was basically that dose was double what the normal long-term dose should be. And people, and it was a brand new product, and by the way, unbelievably effective. I had a client, dog's name was Kugel, my friend Marty Selko. It was an old Labrador, and he loved the product so much. The dog was doing so well that was only supposed to take it for 5 days, but her arthritis was so much better. He called into the office, he ordered a refill, they approved the refill, and he kept using this product. And for about 2 months, and the dog got literally deathly ill. So takes it in. Liver enzymes off the charts high. I do a liver biopsy, send it to the lab. Normally, we, the veterinarian, calls the lab to find out what's going on. This time, I get a call from the pathologist at the lab. He goes, hey, doc, question. This dog, I've been seeing these cases. Was this dog by any chance on that new Rimadyl drug? And I go, yeah, as a matter of fact, he was. He goes, I've been seeing a lot of this. And these enzymes, I will unfortunately tell you, that the other dogs that have had this have not made it. Well, that was my challenge. So I had Marty come in with Kugel, and we literally blasted that dog. He was in the hospital for about 10 days, IV fluids, tube feeding her. She was a female, everything we could. And she made it. She made it through. Well, then we find out what was going on. People, even veterinarians, were so enthralled with this fantastic drug. They were using it for longer, but not at the single daily dose for long term, but they stayed at the high dose. We just didn't know. And that was the problem. But now all the reports coming out, how Rimadyl was a killer, et cetera. Meanwhile, it's not a killer. The killer were the owners or the veterinarians who, because it was new, they were not really used to using it. They were using that double dose for long term. And that was the problem. Lies with any non-steroidal anti-inflammatory and said, there are potential liver issues. That's why the new Galliprant claims to be better for dogs that have kidney or liver issues because it's metabolized a little bit differently. And many of us use dogs that we have, our older dogs or dogs that are infirm, dogs that have liver or kidney issues that need a good non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, we'll put them on that drug, that Galliprant. But it doesn't mean that Rimadyl, well, formerly it is Carprofen is the real name. And now you have Vetprofen and you have Novox, all these generic companies. Do you think these generic companies would come out spending millions to produce their medication if it was that dangerous? No, it was misinformation. And then the people that don't know, they're not part of science. They don't look, they don't research. It's the same thing with these grain-free diets that you hear about that most would agree to stay away from grain-free. Grain is not a problem for dogs, period. It never has been. No scientific paper has come out and proven grain to be a detriment to dogs. Yet, these grain-free diets are booming as are cases of cardiomyopathy. We don't know what it is. It could be the peas. It could be the legumes. Something, it's not taurine levels because they test and the taurine level is there. They're still getting their taurine, but for some reason, they're getting this cardiomyopathy. Now, let's talk about the new isoxazolines and the seizures. Again, you hear one or two stories, and then it just blows up about how that particular isoxazoline, whether it was Bravecto or NexGard or Credelio or Simparica, they're all safe. Now, there has been shown a predisposition to seizures if the dog already has some form of seizure disorder. So if you have a dog, for example, that has epilepsy, you may need to be a little bit more cautious. And when talking to the experts, which I did my homework, it's not all the same. Not every isoxazoline is the same. So, for example, if they didn't seem to do well on Simparica, try one of the other three. If they didn't do well on that one, try another one. Sometimes it's going to happen. So you're proceed with caution, but the drug itself isn't going to cause a perfectly healthy dog seizures. There may have been some sort of predisposition to seizures, which is why that seizure happened. Now, next case is the new Librela. Librela is that new osteoarthritis injection. It is fantastic. I've used it on so many cases with, first of all, no bad reactions, and the dogs are doing amazingly. So amazingly, I get phone calls from the pet parents thanking me for using that new injection. Now, could any dog have any reaction to any drug? Absolutely. Listen to any darn commercial on TV about the psoriasis medication or the medication for Crohn's disease or all these things. What does it say at the end of that? The guy talks super fast like this and he goes, and it can cause death. But does that stop you from taking it? Let me tell you about the FDA. They have to record any untoward event that happens while a person is on or an animal is on that medication. That event may have nothing to do with the medication. It would have happened anyway. Let me give you a case in point. Okay, this will drive the point home so you understand how insane it is. So a good friend of mine, all right, Dr. Dave Brouillette, internal medicine specialist, he was at VCA. He left after being many years as the chief medicine officer, and he started a company, all right, and they make these medications that the bigger companies called Anavive, and the bigger companies just don't want to take time doing it. So it's a great niche, and they've worked on one of the first medications for lymphoma. He's doing great. His new company is doing very well. He is one smart guy. So they were testing a drug, and they, I don't know how many, 40, 50 dogs on the test, and they have to do these things for the FDA. During this testing, two of the dogs drowned. But like any dog, they have to report it. Why did they stop taking the drug? They drowned. So anyone who has a pool knows that you can have a baby gate to protect against the babies, your kids or grandkids, but also protect against your pets. And I know many people, and I had one such incident years ago where a dog drowned in a pool. Okay, my own dog, but it's a puppy. So he wrote that when they wrote to him, the FDA warnings could cause drowning. Could cause drowning? What's that about? He calls the FDA and says, the drug had nothing to do with the drowning. The dog being unsupervised going into the pool, that's what caused the drowning. The dog drowned. It doesn't like send a message to the dog's brain, says, who never swam in his life, and said, oh, ooh, you see that pool? You got to jump in the pool and you got to turn it. Oh, the dog's drowned. Dogs sometimes drown. It's an accident. The dog gets by, whatever happens. So, the FDA writes, okay, thank you so much. When the final FDA warning came out, it still said could cause drowning. Now you know what I'm talking about, that there are things that happens, poop happens. And you can't prove it was because of the medication. This medication, Librela, is out here in the US for, I think, I don't know, maybe 6, 8, 10 months. It's been in Europe since 2020. Millions, not thousands, not hundreds, hundreds of thousands, millions of dogs have been on this injection since 2020, 2021, and doing just great. So it comes here, a few dogs have these problems, you hear these issues, and all of a sudden they jump on this bandwagon about how unsafe the med is. And is this drug passed through all the tests necessary? And as with any medication you're going to take, there are potential hazards, dangers, because no two bodies are alike. It doesn't mean that it's going to cause death. There could have been a problem going on that we didn't know about, the owner didn't know about, the dog doesn't tell you. And all of a sudden you take this new Librela and they have that, whatever it is, the insult, and they pass. Again, you need to proceed with caution with anything you're going to give your dog. Yes, do your homework, but look at the source. Know where it's coming from. And that's kind of how I kind of recommend is I would have no hesitation. I use Rimadyl on my dogs. I use the isoxazoline on my dogs. And as my Labrador, my 12-year-old lab, as he starts getting a little older, I will use Librela on him as well. Right now, fortunately, he's still running up the stairs, still loves to swim. So talk to your veterinarian, that for sure. But don't be afraid to use something that is very effective. And the clients that I've used it on I mean, the patients that I've used it on just have been thrilled with its success and its efficacy. So anyway, there you have it. You want to talk about it, you reach me. You can reach me anytime, but I would not be afraid. Separation anxiety. Do I believe medicated or training? Sometimes it's a combination of both. Why? If they have such severe anxiety, it's difficult to train them. So sometimes what we recommend is using the meds to kind of bring them down a little bit, let them be more amenable and responsive to training. Then when you see that happening, then you start tapering off the meds and you try that. That's my quick answer to that. Life with corgis. Riley got several incisions all over his body. Dr. Jeff, he's back to normal in 3 days. Thank you so much. And yes, and that's the thing. When the skin heals, it's going to take whatever days. We leave stitches in. I like to use laser. So laser and electrocautery, you want to leave the stitches in a little longer. It provides a much cleaner incision, much less bleeding. So I think there are benefits to it. But because of the hemostasis control, it might take them a few more days to heal. The old-fashioned way, we use scalpel. We used to say 10 days with suture removal. In humans, they do 5 to 7 days. Anyway, I do 14 days. But whether you have one incision, 10 incisions, they're going to all heal at the same time. You take stitches out at the same time. So I am glad that we're doing better. Cats with cough, could it be something they swallowed blockage? Yes. I mean, it could be blockage where? If it's coughing and it's literally something that's blocking the airway, they wouldn't be with us. If it's blocking a lung, we'd have much more severe effects and we would have a very sick cat. You know what it feels like when you're drinking something or you're eating something and it goes down the wrong pipe? It's instant. You're not going to feel it 4 days later. It's instant. You start coughing, the reaction is instant. And if something is swallowed properly, I mean, properly meaning goes down the esophagus and into the stomach and from the stomach into the small intestine, then it bypasses the lungs. The coughing may be trying to spit something up from the esophagus, but that's going to sound differently. And those cats or dogs are very, very uncomfortable. When you see this in an animal that is totally fine, can't wait for his next meal, all you have to do is give him something to eat. And if he swallows that, everything's fine, and has a BM on the other side, then you know nothing's really at least completely blocking. And even dogs that have partial blockage are not going to be 100%. I love that question. Boy, you're going to keep me on longer. You're going to get me in trouble with Mark. So that's a good question also. What we're seeing more so here in the West, certainly in Los Angeles, that we have never really had to deal with, and I'm going to get smiles from anybody back east, especially in Florida, heartworm disease. They've been year-round heartworm problems because of the humidity, and they've been on heartworm prevention year-round. We never really pushed heartworm prevention, but there is a mosquito, or now more than one, I'm sure, that has, as any insect will do, adapted to our drier climate. We are seeing cases of heartworm disease. I had the first case years ago of a case of heartworm and golden retriever that was born in and never left Los Angeles. Well, how the heck could this dog get heartworm if we don't have mosquito problem? Tons of mosquito problems happen because it lived near a cemetery. And if you lift up a headstone at a cemetery where the grass is lush and green and it's being watered several times a day, then you will see thousands of mosquito larvae. And that's what they saw. The Heartworm Prevention Society came out, saw where they lived, right at the foothills, right behind a cemetery, and they knew exactly where those mosquitoes came from, and they were right. They predicted then that in Los Angeles, we are going to have a mosquito problem. It might take 10 to 15 years, but it's going to happen, and I think it's happening. So my recommendation is get your pet's heartworm tested. Now, the isoxazolines, 3 of the 4, Credelio has Credelio Plus, NexGard has NexGard Plus, and Simparica has Simparica Trio. All 3 of those are now flea, tick, and heartworm as well. And as a matter of fact, NexGard Plus is also intestinal parasites. So talk to your veterinarian. I would recommend now that we know what we know, and we know how deathly a severe heartworm infection can be, how dangerous and expensive the heartworm treatment is, just prevent it. It's so easy. A once a month chewable treat, and you can prevent heartworm disease. So that's my recommendation. Okay, everybody. So that's all we have time for today. I mean, I wish I had more time because these are great. And yeah, anytime you want to have any questions for me, just please reach out. Would love to chat with you. And also thank you all, those of you who commented on the comments that I was receiving after posting that wonderful note I got from clients whose dog I helped out a lot. And you know, it's one of those cases we talked about. It was that mass that we discovered, accident, not incidentally, but certainly not coming in for that. I noticed the bulge in the stomach. It turned out to be a 6-pound splenic tumor. Not only 6-pound splenic tumor, a 6-pound benign splenic tumor. For those of you who did not, were not on the show last week, the week before, it was benign. So now I can actually say that we saved this dog's life, because if that splenic mass had ruptured, sadly, she would have bled out. So what was so nice was your comments. As I joked with one of my friends who commented, I said, boy, at least one person out there likes me. So anyway, it just confirms that the drive and that I had to go into this business, to become a veterinarian, was not for naught. As I said, it wasn't a choice. I think it was a calling. And here I am 40 years into it and still literally loving every minute. So I do plan to keep going. I know that I've been threatened by my clients that they're going to kill me if I stop. So I'm not going to stop. I'm going to keep going as long as I can. Anyway, thanks for joining me here, and both on Pet Life Radio and on Instagram Live. We will be here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Anyway, thanks for joining me. I see the numbers on this show. Please spread the word. We love to help people with their pets. We love the questions. I used to have to prepare for the show, and I always had stuff to talk about, but now we get so many great questions. It saves me a little time. I don't have to prepare for the show. I can always talk about something, but I always have like in my mind something that I want to address, but your questions are fantastic. So thank you so much, and we will see you next week. All right. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.